A beautiful day today in my heart, but not so much in the sky. We're having a dark, cloudy January day. I hope you're having plenty of sunshine in your heart, and that's really all that needs to happen. So we're going to have a great time today going through more of the adamantine particles. It's a fun chapter, especially to read together, because the others, the other two main pillars of power in this universe, namely love and spirit, can sometimes not show us enough examples, shall we say. There's spirit in everything, and yet we'll still say, well, where is it? I don't see it. Well, that's because you haven't known that it was there, and you haven't learned to focus on it or see evidence of its performance. The same with love is who you are. And, of course, love is who God is. But we've just been distracted from seeing the obvious by all the many, many expressions of love, which we think that to love and be loved is the highest point in life. Well, those also carry past tense to them and future tense, right? To be loved is a future tense. To have been loved is a past tense. To actually be loved is the present tense of love. God being in all times and places is the forever tense of love. And we see the same thing with spirit. We try to limit it so that we can not put it in a box, but at least say a prayer to it and know how to address our prayers and such as that. So we try to objectify. Well, we haven't had much luck as human beings trying to objectify any of the three major powers of the universe. We try to see them out there, and then we try to see them acting, and we throw up our hands with a big question mark and say, okay, well, what did I see? And we say, well, I don't know. Believe it or not, this is exactly what quantum physicists are having as a problem in finding adamantine particles. They don't call them that. They don't even have a name for what they're looking for. But you see, everything so far that's been discovered in quantum space, every particle, no matter how tiny, it could be so small it can't be seen, it can only be postulated. And what I mean by that is, We see the cause and effect pattern leading from a particle, so we know it's there. But every particle so far discovered has to rely on something previous to it to create it. And I'm not talking about God. I'm talking about another particle. So what they're looking for is a particle that is self-creating. It creates itself, and it doesn't draw upon other forms of energy, on other structures, upon other existent platforms of creation. It is its own thing, and it then supplies all the other energy required for the universe. Now, theoretical physicists know it has to be that way. There could be no other explanation. There's actually no doubt on that. But what is it? They don't know. Where is it? They don't know. In fact, it actually led them to start searching for layers of different universe compositions above and below what we call a universe. They actually come to the point of frustration of saying, well, it may not even be here. We may be drawing upon creation from another place. Are they right about that? Well, we don't know. They don't know either. What we do know is that there is a source that every other particle, no matter how small it is, draws upon. And these particles are self-creating. And we know they're self-creating. They have to be. They've been specified to have to be because they generate a form of magnetism that cannot exist in the world. This is in the text that I sent you today. I'll get into that text in just a minute. But I kind of wanted to present this from a freestyle representation so that we can work through the message and the explanation of the message. Okay. You see, in the material universe, the one we live in, the one that can be quantified, mathematically encoded, and so forth, measured, weighed, observed for composition, and so forth. There is no pure magnetism. It's electromagnetism. I think you have probably come across in reading or studying that it's referred to as electromagnetism. It actually begins with electricity that is turned in on itself to have a magnetic force. And all of magnetism that is in the material universe as we know it is electromagnetism. The magnetism that created the universe by the hand of God, we would say, I don't know what atheistic scientists would say, but still, it's a phenomena we all agree on. The magnetic force that started it all has no electricity to begin with. It simply activates the collection of other particles that come together and then acquire energy for the development of whatever they are called to do. There's a little parable that Yeshua gave me in Love Without End, and I'll say this very briefly. You won't take time to read it, but it's just like there was a room full of ping pong balls that were laced with iron. And you were given a magnetic vest to wear, and you walk in the room, and you start attracting those ping pong balls to you. And according to your energetic field, whatever that might be, you would collect these ping pong balls in unique patterns for you. Someone else that walked in the room might collect them in unique patterns for them. But you would just be drawing together the ping pong balls. And there would be no electricity involved. It would just be you and the ping pong balls. And you would be collecting. And they would come together. And it would be the act of their coming together that would generate the origin of energy. So that's basically where energy begins. But something had to call those ping pong balls into collection. And that energy was you. So it's a different form of energy. It's a 1+1 type of energy that didn't have existence except to call forth aggregates of other particles that do provide the energy. This is what Dr. Hal Puthoff came to get further explanation from me in the event that Yeshua had told me more. Well, he told me a little more, and I think it was helpful, but I don't think he felt I was ready, completely ready to understand. Anyway, these adamantine particles were free-floating in quantum space until God entered, and from that point on, the particles began to assemble. They began to form what is referred to in the Bible as the firmament of existence. That means the basic physical nature of existence. And then he said to Lucifer, let there be light. And it all lit up, just like the sage lights came on. So this particle that precedes all of that is what we're talking about. And it's a pretty powerful thing. I don't have a better way of saying it because I wasn't given more information. But I would like to share with you today the information he gave me. And I know that you'll have a good time with it because of all three of these PowerPoints on a three-legged table, this is the one you live with the most, that you focus on for the building of your life, that we actually use in the building of our cars, that we use for cooking our food, and we associate with our mortality. As by comparison, spirit, we more associate with our immortality, although I think that's a shame because it's here always with us, and we could have a better life if we dialogued with it. The same with love. But still, most of the time we're focusing upon how to renovate our home, put new doors in, change the paint color, or repair the roof. And those are all conglomerates of adamantine particles that started out with just initial collection. Then they would become an atom, which actually is a very complex component of even a particle. And then a molecule, and from molecules to different categories of minerals that are on the chart of minerals that would include gases as well as hard minerals. So we build these ingredients through combining, then further acquisition, solidification, and it builds structure up to a point. And I'm saying up to a point. We could literally reimagine anything and get it to change because there is plasticity and mobility within all of these primordial accumulations of elements. Once they get into a more solid form, such as your home, It would take a wrecking crew to demolish your home, and hopefully that will never happen, including natural wrecking crews that sometimes do come in and happen. What it would take to move the earth would be perhaps volcanic activity or heaven forbid, a hurricane or the earth shifting, geographical shifting. Well, it could happen. and frequently it does happen in small degrees. We constantly see unexpected anomalies happen in the ocean. Flows are rivers of flows that move from warm to cool or cool to warm can actually reverse. And usually they do because sun flares change from the sun, or the sun changes its polarity, which all of these are examples of the mobility of particles at low densities. They're still plastic. They can move. And as a matter of fact, this last year, the sun changed its polarity. One pole to the other went positive to negative, or negative to positive. I don't remember which direction it went into. But if something the size of the sun is that mobile and plastic and can change, then of course, many, many things can change. And Yeshua demonstrated much of this in his life because he knew how to command the elements. He raised the dead. He suspended gravity so he could walk on water. And of course, he healed many, many people. But I really believe that one of the reasons he always said after his miraculous healings, your faith made you whole. Well, I think there are two reasons, really. One is he wanted the recipient to be a participant so that that person could actually hold on to the miracle through continued faith. And the reason I believe that is sometimes after the miracle was over, he would say, go forth now and sin no more, or take care of your family, or something that was perpetual. He would include the perpetuity of it. And those who had no faith would probably lose the miracle and never understand it in the first place. But I think there's another reason why he expressed the faith, and why he did not create a miracle for everyone and would not. He was asked sometimes, and he would give another, he would deflect the question. I think it's because the mobility, the motility of change involved in bringing about a physical miracle requires the acceptance of it. And when people are into a hard, cold agreement that a rock is a rock, my diseased body part is that body part, and it is what it is, there's not going to be any submission to change. The kinds of changes that need to occur. We need to have the faith and the spirit of humility and surrender to allow this level of change to occur within ourselves. So what I'm, and when he said, with enough faith, you could call the mountain and bring it here. Well, I think that faith involved your connection with the mountain, meaning you literally could connect with that mountain. You're not just observing it externally. You're not just observing it from 15 miles away and trying to determine how much dynamite we're going to need or other explosives to burrow through that mountain. You're not looking at it objectified. Faith is not objectified. Faith is embracive. It's penetrative. It's integrative. And it's open to possibilities, all possibilities, which means it makes the miracle possible. God created the universe. So why couldn't he separate the waters of the Red Sea? Of course he could. But why do it if there's no faith and people will not move through the opening you just created? If they're just going to hang back on the desert and say, oh, we can't do that. It might close in on us and we would be killed. Well, it was their faith that held the waters open. They got through it. And of course, the Egyptian soldiers had no such faith. They just looked at it as a weird phenomena, like maybe there had been an earthquake somewhere else and it just drew the waters down one direction, down another. And they went through the tunnel and were engulfed by the waters, killed. No faith did not keep the waters open. So the mobility of this dimension is what I think we can have fun with and broaden our life with. And yes, I do believe that some faith healers are legit. I think they truly are demonstrating their connection with these levels of reality. And the people who are receiving their blessings are also connecting in faith. And they know that things are actually movable. They're reshapable. They're plastic. And by plastic, I mean as in making a clay jar on a potter's wheel. I don't mean a hydrocarbon plastic that is synthetic. I hope you know that when I use plastic, I'm talking about a sculpting phenomena where you can take mud, shape it, bake it, and you have a new object. Okay. So I ask him at one point, and we'll get into this in the reading, what happens when we die? If we're composed of adamantine particles, where do they go? What happens? I think you'll be very interested in hearing the answer. So let's just make sure. Nancy, as far as you can see, are we being recorded?
Yes.
I think.
Okay. Let me double check here. Can't see it at the bottom of my screen for some reason, but I think so.
I'm getting a lot of static on my phone. Is it coming across to you, Nancy, as static?
No.
Good.
Mine's clear as a bell.
Right. All right. Let's get started, everybody. This is Chapter 5, The Adamantine Particles. And we're gonna stretch over pages 114 to page 119. Now, it's not a solid reading of all those pages because I had to remove some of my comments. We could have been on this for an hour reading just those five pages. So I had to take out some of my comments, and some of his comments referred back to other things that we haven't touched on yet. So I tried to keep it as coherent as we could, but I encourage you to read the whole chapter while we're doing this. And it is so meaty. We'll probably be on it for another 2 weeks. So sometimes during these 2 weeks, try to read it. Everything will make more sense to you, and it will all pull together. Okay, what would you say about that, Nancy?
I would say definitely. I'm back. I'm here. I mean, there's a lot to unpack here, and a lot to, understand, but it's just really fun. It really is. The realm of particles and, to heal our life, and I think about it a lot in terms of our bodies, so kind of play with that one. But yeah, it's a lot, and yet I'm glad we're going to have more time with it.
Yeah, he had a ball with it.
I'm glad we're going to have more time to study together because there is a lot, and I hope people bring up their questions or think about them through the week because we all have our own discoveries of how we work with the particles and how they do come into our lives and how they sometimes don't. And I mean, I love how he's so consistent about the Sacred Heart, and you have to power that up and activate that to really magnetize them.
Well,
so.
Yeah, well, Nancy, adamantine particles are with us for the whole of our life. It's just some of them are not active. Most of them are already committed to structure. And we don't seem to be able to do anything about it. But you'd be surprised. This is why structure is actually as responsive as it is to our, well, our prayers, our invocations, and our thoughts. You know, there's an old saying, what you think you are. And we wonder, well, how does that work? Well, that's because the whole universe is fluid, and it can rearrange itself. So, you know, even when we project our requests and our thoughts, things can change, and they often do, in remarkable and surprising ways. And so hopefully our study of this chapter will help you to understand a little better how that happens. Okay, let's get started. This lesson started with a question from me that began the whole of this conversation. I asked him, if there is infinite supply, why do we believe in scarcity? What has conditioned our belief so deeply that we cannot see beyond our limitations? His answer, that is because you consider all substance to belong to structure, which gives it form, instead of viewing the free-flowing river of life as infinite potential connected to its source. What I am just now realizing, This is me again. It was in parentheses, so I thought it was from him, but it's not. It's from me. Okay, so then I replied, what I'm just now realizing, you can see with total clarity. I was talking to him. Yes, he can see with total clarity. And I was asking, how can I increase my awareness? He soothed away my impatience with a compassionate look and a little smile. Then he proceeded to explain, you must first learn about the Sacred Heart and learn about how to center your life around it more completely. This is your true heart and your sacred chamber. Most people have closed its doors by the end of childhood. After that, one's perceptions of life-creating particles diminishes, and what is left appears to be a fixed supply. Then literally, a person uses up his life, consuming his life resources for structural investments, as well as contradictory patterns of living. The result is depletion and old age. And he continues, only the true heart can sense the vital flow and exchange of particle energy. This is why you are more intuitive in the areas of your greater devotion. When the Sacred Heart comes to life again and its fires glow within, you will begin to magnetize a fresh supply of adamantine particles from an infinitely abundant universe. There is no limit to the adamantine particles that can be drawn to you. These can be used for empowering your life, healing it, and lifting it to a much higher state of performance. The Sacred Heart is a holy chamber. This is the place where true prayer takes place. It's a place of peace, solitude, a place so powerfully connected with your source that all you have to do is enter for prayer to occur. It doesn't matter what you say, or even if you say anything, being there with God is the prayer, and entering the holy chamber is a sacred act. This is why I suggested to my apostles that they go into a closet, because an external place of silence and seclusion helps to promote an entry into the holy chamber. I was reluctant to give words to pray, because the moment a person substitutes words for prayer, the point is lost. The only value of words is for the focusing of thoughts to a higher realm and the preparing of one's soul for surrender into sacred silence. As you are joined in the holy chamber with the source of it all, a power will be activated, which will attract to you whatever is needed. This is a very special place within your beingness, and you can know when you have entered it by the complete stillness therein. Within it, there is sacredness and purity like a blanket of new-fallen snow. He stated more than once that what the heart commands, it keeps. All the particles that have been designated for the purpose of your life and commanded by your heart are yours to keep forever. I thought about those words a great deal, although they were too much for me to fathom by myself. So one morning, I went straight to the point and asked, if I were to cease living on this earth today, what would happen to all the adamantine particles that comprise my body, my life, and my creations? His response was this: uncountable legions of adamantine particles simply belong to the universe, bequeathed by the Creator for common use through the forming of such elements as oxygen, nitrogen, carbon, and so forth. Such particles would return to their common matrix. Trillions to the cube root belong to the human race and would recirculate into newborn children according to ways in which their love resembles the pathway of love you left behind. Billions of adamantine particles have come to you through your family line and will return there to support future generations of children according to similarities of love that you would have shared with them. In the days following your departure, the particles which you exchanged with others for the mutual sharing of life will return to their rightful donors. However, at the moment of your passing, all the particles which you have personally magnetized by your heart and used in the creation of your life will leave with you. They will either attach to your soul or else travel to a place that you have marked with love and will wait until your heart calls them forth again. Either way, they are yours forever. Often, such points of love are designated collectively by friends and family who wish to continue together in eternity to return to some plane of existence and to work together again. Now, it's back to me speaking. The responsibility associated with hearing that truth was staggering. Many days were required just to absorb and contemplate that revelation. It was truly an awesome realization to think that we leave behind us the very footprints of our lives, and that others may walk in our footsteps, even though we take with us the things that are central to our beingness and our love. All of our experiences we leave for others to share, while we carry forth with that which we came to love. I'm going to add something at this point, which he spoke to me in years after this book was written. So I didn't interject it into this conversation, but I'm not exactly sure how this discussion of adamantine particles and afterlife came up, but it did. It was very powerful. And he said, in terms of your inheritance for living, you get to keep everything you gave. You will lose everything you took. He said, this is why I encouraged the widow who was on the edge of poverty to just give a mite, which is no more than a penny for us, if nothing else. But it doesn't just include material giving. It includes prayers. It includes well wishes, help, and ideas, teamwork. There are many, many ways we give. We give love. But all the things you give, you get to keep. Isn't that a perfect balance of living? And all the things you took, you will lose. I think this is really perfect justice without judgment, by a God who is nothing but love. Okay, I will continue with what I was reading, but I thought you might appreciate that little interjection because it added to this thought, even though it came many years later. Okay, these thoughts were expanded for me through my new understanding of adamantine particles and their river of living supply. With every answer he provided, I found new questions. Ultimately, the greatest question is the one of responsibility, and each person must answer it for himself. Do we leave behind patterns of love or patterns of struggle? Patterns of greatness or patterns of illusion? Do we leave behind us knowledge or mystery, love or unforgiveness? And his response that came some days later, when I suggested that a person store up his wealth in heaven, it was with this reality in mind. When your life has been lived with a clear purpose, and when your love has been directed to principles and thoughts that carry it to higher planes of consciousness, then the treasures of your life will be stored more safely. On the other hand, when a person's love and life have been unclear and confused, peppered with insincerity and betrayal, his life purposes can become lost in the lives of those he has hurt. This is not good for anyone concerned. All too often, these lost particles are held hostage until debts are paid, which can cause great pain and confusion to all parties. It would be so much easier and healthier to forgive and to release. Then this brought up my question to him. Is this what Eastern philosophy speaks of as karma? Is this truth the cause of it? And his reply was, I lost that place. In the universe, the process of cause and effect describes the way in which balance is lost and regained. When balance has been lost, it must be regained. That is karma. However, retreading the pathways of cause and effect is not the only way of restoring balance and wholeness. By grace and by love, there is a higher way. All that is asked of you is that you fervently seek the restoration of wholeness whenever it has been lost. It is my hope that you find it through a reconnection with your source, who will cancel your debt by the greater power of love, grace, and synchronicity. Karma is a base level ethics action, a kind of police agenda for the universe. Although it works to rebalance life and is necessary to the universe, it can injure souls. It is my central purpose to raise souls to a higher sense of responsibility, one empowered by the Sacred Heart and by the grace of God, thereby ending that bitter cycle. Now it's back to things I wrote. The beauty and completeness of that message gave me so much to ponder. Although I was more emotionally affected by the compassion within his explanation and his forgiveness of human error. Let's face it, hanging on the cross, his last words to a criminal dying beside him were, "This day you will be with me in paradise." No great confession was necessary. He didn't need it. By the grace and the love of God, we can be restored to our wholeness, and in so doing, we bring others that we may have hurt into a better state of ability to repair their own lives and rise above it, maybe ultimately forgiving us as well. But continuing back to his statement, much human error and dysfunction have been passed on to future generations as part of the total human memory, or perhaps the memory of a family line. He went on to explain how, with our limited understanding, we tend to condemn a sin or crime, which is only the latest manifestation of some desperate pattern begun long ago. Who does not rejoice to inherit the achievements of those who have come before? Yet how much more courage does it take to live and to carry on in the midst of errors that have preceded one's stay on earth? There is no avoiding the collective inheritance of both good and bad. Then he looked deeply with penetrating clarity into my eyes, as if he were looking through my eternity, and pronounced, "You are innocent and born as perfection, but into a world that has every conceivable legacy. These legacies come to each person, partially by magnetism, yet partially without respect of person. For all men are equally brothers in the human race. Without exemption, each one must accept some part of the collective inheritance. This is the original and true meaning of a greatly abused statement that none is above sin. The true meaning of that statement is that no one within the brotherhood is above accepting some part of the negative legacy and the responsibility for transmuting it. The next time you see someone living in a way that is upsetting to you, instead of condemning, you may say a silent prayer of thanks that it is not you who had to accept that commission. When you see a handicapped person, instead of seeing disability, perhaps you could look at the great courage and ability it took to receive that destiny. When you see a man living under a bridge, you might think of honoring a soul so noble as to endure loss and abandonment as his charter. When a child is dying of cancer, instead of pitying its loss of life, see instead a soul so assured of immortality that he would receive that legacy. Do not view hardship as punishment, but rather as inclusion. Our reading for the day ends there, but it is definitely subject to any level of discussion you would like. It's not even 4 o'clock. We are early or exactly on time, depending on how you look at it. We will have our blessing when we have finished all discussions about what we brought forward today. And if I didn't answer a question today, you can still ask that, and I'll remember it for next week, okay? So, Nancy, let's open up our board.
Okay, we've got Caroline here. Hi, Caroline. Welcome. Your line is open.
Well, thank you so much, and that was an unbelievable. It's funny because every time I read the book, every time I hear passages from the book, there's more in there, and it's more of a wow. There was an amazing wow when I first read it, but then when you went into more detail today, Glenda, it was incredible, because you really take the fairly simplistic view of karma, where, you know, you've done something bad, you're going to be, if anything happens, the trouble with the basic view of karma is that you can justify anything happening to anybody by the fact that they must have done something really bad in a previous life. And
no, and it may not be direct karma.
Yeah.
And it may not be direct karma from something you did once. You may be carrying someone else's load.
Right.
Right.
The connection,
or the nation's load. Or your family line's load, or it can be a random thing. And the idea that that we aren't entitled necessarily, we all hope and want to be free of suffering and feel that we should be entitled to that. But in fact, the world is full of suffering, and it's a blessing to not have it. And everybody deals with adversity in a way that makes them stronger. And I think there may be something in the book that you never get more put on you than you can actually handle. That's what really happens in life. So in many ways I'm speechless, because I can't really say it any better than Joshua was saying it just now in the words that he's written. So that's amazing. And I was calling for I know we don't like to get super political on this call, but I feel so strongly that I would like to have a blessing Bobby Kennedy to get in as health secretary, because I am so saddened by the death and injury from all the COVID the COVID policies that were enforced with the vaccine and with the lack of access to treatments that actually worked. And I've been praying for a change in healthcare. I mean, I'm a two-time breast cancer survivor, and I've seen how Big Pharma has taken over that world and prevented non-patentable cures from coming out and being used. So it would be wonderful to see a revolution here in that world so that people can be healthy again. It's a huge thing.
That's a wonderful.
I want not just America but the whole world to be healthy again, for everybody to have access to the simple and effective stuff that can't be made into expensive products. That all of those things become available to people so that they can actually reclaim their health without being completely bankrupted by the medical system as it is right now. So that's my blessing. That's what I would like to hope for and pray for in the near future. I hope that's what we're going to see.
Thank you. Oh, that's great. Yes, and I'm with you. I often pray that blessing, because there are not enough answers right now. And probably it's unlikely that the whole world will go through life without ever picking up a cold, a flu, or even some other more serious illness. But if we have answers for it, then we can help one another. And that's what we need. We need to get rid of suppression on answers that are already available, because they are financially inconvenient to vested interests. We need to get rid of that. That's got to go. And then we've got to have more freedom available to genuinely research what God placed into nature. We were told it's all here. And I believe that with all my heart. It's all here. But we have to be free to look for it. And then the next step would be restoring our faith in one another, that we are here to help, because right now I would say the trust level is very low, and it's hard to be healed, even of conventional practices, when trust is so low. So many people do not trust their doctors, they don't trust the medical system, they don't trust science, and so forth. Well, you know about these things, Carolyn, but I'm just saying that for the benefit of our country. We have to earn that trust. Trust can't just happen because we want to create permission for things that are not right. Okay, so the lack of trust is perhaps to some degree an expression of intelligence. So we've got to work up to earn that trust, and we start by taking suppression off of good things we already know.
A lack of censorship is what works, and a lack of money control of the research. That's what I would also pray for.
Yes, absolutely. Carolyn, we have had a lot of static while you're talking. Could we figure out how to correct that?
I could be just on the, rather than using a headset. Hold on just a second.
How's this? Is this better?
Yes,
this is better. I think we could hear most of what you said, but. Now,
yeah, it was more about just freedom, lack of censorship, lack of moneyed control over health research and what's available to people, so that all these effective non-patentable cures or treatments can be used. As I said, people don't get bankrupted by healthcare that isn't even good for them. So that's my prayer.
Thank you. It's a good one.
Well, we're going to all pray with you because it's something we all want, Caroline. And thank you for initiating that. You are
okay.
You are a splendid leader. You are a splendid leader. Okay? And we're so glad you're in our community.
We sure are.
Thank you.
Okay, Glenda, I'm going to open up. Do we have any more callers? We are open, folks, if you want to call in with a request or a comment or share something.
Yeah, anything to discuss?
Well, before we take another call, I've always loved that portion, Glenda, about nobody's above sin. It really cleared that up for me with just my understanding. It sure helps with not judging others and seeing us as a brotherhood. And, you know, I think it's hard to, we're always looking at the parts rather than the whole, because it's really hard when you're part of the whole.
Exactly.
And but that has thank you. But that section is just a powerful one for people to contemplate and see working in their lives when they're looking at others less fortunate, or even your own situation when you have to surrender and just, you know, have humility about a situation and understand how God can work through this too. And be patient. There's a big picture to kind of balance out. But we're part of it. So I think our attitude affects how it all kind of works out for us too. So our thoughts, our intentions, as you said. But, so folks, if you have any questions about our reading today, about our teaching today, we'd love to hear from you.
Well,
I think everybody's full. It's a big one to unpack, like I said, and so I think people are going to go and continue doing the reading.
People are satisfied.
Maybe satisfied. Yes.
Okay, so everyone is satisfied. That's great.
So.
All right. Well, then I am going to turn off the Q&A. We're going to go in. All right. And you're unmuted, Nancy, if you need to speak up. But I think I will say extemporaneously just a little bit more. And that is that we are, pardon me. We are all one gigantic family. We all belong together, but we're a very dysfunctional family. For many reasons that we can't go into right now, it would be probably the biggest seminar of the century, stating all the reasons why we are dysfunctional. But Yeshua gave in this one conversation a reason why it may be necessary over the eons of our creation. We have committed misdeeds, harmful attitudes, and outright crimes against each other. We have killed people, enslaved people, stolen their lives and their creations, told them what to believe, prevented them from finding answers that are so available and natural from life. And these accumulated harmful actions created debts that have to be solved. Not because God has placed condemnation on us. He hasn't. Occasionally, yes, he's gotten pretty mad and shown his wrath on certain sectors of humanity. So there's no denying that he gets angry at times. But that's not what's going to solve the problem. What's going to solve the problem is rebalancing the universe. And you might think, well, couldn't he do that by just pointing his hand in the direction of lots more adamantine particles and bringing them in. Of course he could. But why would he, when what we had was a perfect creation that doesn't need to be recreated, only rebalanced? And he possibly might not feel motivated to recreate the balance if we're going to unbalance it again. So we probably need to learn something about our responsibility in life. And that would be my suggestion, that we've got to really rise up to handle our responsibilities as children of God. I try to do that, and I try to help the people I know take an open stride on that, and then to be very compassionate about those who suffer. They may not be suffering as punishment, some of them possibly, but don't just automatically put a blanket assumption on it. They may be suffering out of contract to be one who's going to rebalance for the whole. Some things that were created against people who lived 5,000 years ago may not even have options for rebalancing what was destroyed then. But the consequence of it may still exist and can be rebalanced. And I have actually had the privilege in counseling sessions of presenting that idea to some people who were suffering and wondering, and actually even in counseling says, why am I always being punished? I helped them to see that maybe they weren't being punished. Maybe they had been selected because they agreed as saints, as heroes, to carry the load of rebalance. And what it resulted in was waterfalls of tears and crying that went on and on, because finally they were released into hearing the truth. And whatever they had been suffering, the suffering became less, much less. It's a little bit like the words of Buddha. I've forgotten what book that was in right now, so I'll just get to the chase. He said that pain is inevitable. Suffering is not. Pain happens. You break your leg, it's going to hurt. Are you going to suffer for it? That's a choice. And so what I have seen sometimes in these counseling sessions is that the pain doesn't end, but the suffering does. Because suffering comes from the magnification of the pain that we create to either make sure it doesn't happen again, or to try to figure out why it happened in the first place, or to gain support from others, or to attract answers that could help us to be relieved from it. In other words, there are personal reasons why we suffer. There's usually an objective reason for why there's pain. And by discovering what that objective reason is, many times the suffering ends. This can happen, and has happened. I've witnessed it for many people in my community, in my family, and in my work, that they've been sick or just down and lifeless, fatigue, no motivation, no interest in life, until they finally get an accurate diagnosis of what's wrong. When they get that diagnosis, there is the pain. That's where the pain is coming from. And all of the suffering disappears. It all disappears. I saw it happen with my sister, and she would not mind me telling you, with her name, Mary. She was diagnosed with lymphoma. 4 weeks, somewhere between 4 weeks and 4 months to live. All of a sudden, she knew why she'd been feeling so bad. Her family knew. Her friends knew. They all joined her in cheering for recovery. Well, she lasted another, let's see how many, I think it was 22 years longer. And she didn't die of lymphoma. She died of pneumonia. So this has happened many, many times. Find out if you are one of such a person and fatigue or discouragement or feeling of personal oppression has been a blanket over you for a long time. I would make two very strong, actually more than that, three or four very strong recommendations. One is recover the belief in yourself. You are a soul. On the level of a soul, you are immortal. And there are answers. Next, recover your relationship with God. Forgive him for not taking you out of that pain or that suffering. And actually, he's not going to take you out of suffering, but he can take you out of pain. Because pain is caused objectively. And in the blink of an eye, he can take anyone out of pain, and then the suffering disappears. Suffering is our choice. And it helps to end the suffering as much as you can. Take that blanket off of you as nearly close as you can. You know, it's possible you can't take it all off. You know, me, I don't like dentists. And if I know it's going to be a major procedure, I probably don't sleep the night before, and I'm worried, and I'm anxious, and I'm clutching my fist. Not on a major level of suffering, but I'm suffering because I'm expecting the worst. Okay. I get into the chair, and it's like, okay, I'm here. And I get the final diagnosis. Okay, that's what they're doing. I relax. The suffering goes away. And after they're finished, well, the pain goes away. This is process happens over and over to so many of us. And you can do something about the suffering. You can do something about reconnecting with your Creator and with the higher part of yourself that doesn't need suffering. Yes, the higher part of yourself will engage in whatever pain you have because it's here for you and your whole being, and it does not detach from you and your whole being. But it doesn't dramatize suffering. It's on a whole different plane. Connect with it, and it will help relieve the problem. And then go about trying to find out what the source of pain actually is. It could be an emotional wound in your childhood. It could be that a career you always wanted to have no longer exists in this world because it's now been rendered obsolete. And you think you're going to feel like a failure if you find out what it is. No, just the opposite. When you find out what it is, you'll know it wasn't you that failed. You know, sometimes life just goes on. And we need to go with it. We need to flow like a river. You can never step into the same river twice. But you can put your boat on it and travel with it. And find your place with it. Okay. Well, that was the little interjection I wanted to make because I know that every now and then we all come up with this dual reality. There's pain and then there's suffering. And which is it? Okay. We handle them differently. The best way to handle pain is to find out what's causing it and then relieve it to the best that you can. The best way to handle suffering is to find out why you need to suffer at all and then handle that, because the two are different. Yeshua said it. The Buddha said it. Many psychologists have said it. And I think in many ways, many faith healers work on that principle. Not all of them are saints who can move the particles around. But just by faith, they can cause you or others who join them in faith to relieve the suffering long enough that whatever is wrong can heal. And I think there's the miracle that happens to many of us. If you have the faith, you can let go of the suffering. And there are many kinds of suffering. Some could be the loss of a spouse or a child. And you think that if I don't let go of the suffering, then I'm not letting go of them. I'm going to make sure we're connected forever. And the only way I can do it is by suffering. That's a plausible reason that I have encountered with many people who are suffering. So find out what it is that makes you need to suffer. Some people need to suffer because it's guilt. It's not pain. It's guilt. They might have included somebody else in the pain, and they feel guilty about it, so they keep on suffering. Get rid of the guilt. Suffering's gone. And guess what? You will heal faster. It's not always an instant miracle, but it's also an instant turnaround of possibility. And should never be forgotten about as a skill for managing your life. On top of which, one more thing. People will want to be around you more, to help you more, if they're not made to feel guilty by your suffering. Or oppressed by your suffering. You give them hope that they can help you. And see you have benefits from what they do for you. Okay, I think I should be quiet right now. We need to get ready for our blessing. And what I want you to do is what we usually do this time before it. We become engaged with our body. Up till this point, you've probably been more engaged with your mind, your heart, listening, reviewing your life in relation to things that were presented to you. But I doubt that you were moving around, and you most definitely were not on the basketball court. I won't say definitely. There might just be someone that would try to do that just to challenge me next time. But anyway, I think you know what I mean. Somebody might be gardening just because it's a great place to be. And why sit still? So, but anyway, for most of us, including myself, we've been sitting in a chair, not even moving our arms or legs, or maybe our fingers, only to adjust the telephone we're holding. So what I want you to do now is just stand up. And put your feet, if you can, about a foot apart. enough so that you can shift your weight without falling. And I just want you to shift your weight. That's all at the beginning, just a little shift of weight. And that starts everything moving. Now, I want you just to turn your body at the waist to face the right side. And then slowly, I want you to turn it to face the left side. Now, I want you just to lean forward a little bit at your waist so that you open the passageways through your hip region. These can get very tightly bound when you've been sitting on your tukas too long. Looking for the right word there. Not sure I found it, but anyway, you've got the message. You sit on your bottom side, and there's not much flow going into your legs or coming back from your legs. We want this area around your hips opened up. So again, we're going to swing to the right a little bit, and it can be slow and gentle, and shift to the left just a little bit, slow and gentle. Now this time, lean back just a little bit, not enough to lose your balance, but just a little bit, okay? So you'll open up your abdomen, your abs, your core, and you'll lean into the small of your back. Now we're moving up into our torso. So at this point, what you need to do is to raise your arms, your hands, and reach for the ceiling, okay? Just reach and make a fist, and reach and make a fist. Okay, and now take your arms out to the side, okay, both of them at the same time. So you stretch your shoulders. Oh, yeah, this is where we hold up a lot of tension. Even when we think we're not tense, we still hold it there because we are very careful about what we put in our mind. And it's sort of like the review team exists in your shoulders telling you, well, be careful about this. No, don't listen to that. Listen to that. Or, oh, wow, I never thought of that. Whatever it is. Positive, negative, in between, nothing. Everything gets reviewed before it goes up to your head. And so there's a lot of tension right here in the lower cervical region. And that means you need to turn your head to the right and to the left a little bit, not enough to get dizzy or destabilized. And then tilt it back a little bit. And then lean it forward like you're in a prayer position, okay? So all of these things will also be opening your chest, which will help you take a very deep breath. And that's what I want you to do next. I want you to take the deepest breath you can, the fullest breath you can, now. And hold it to the count of three. And now blow it out with your mouth. Once again, deep breath through the nose. Count of three. And blow it out through your mouth. Now, okay, sit straight. And without turning your head, tilt it to the right, like you're leaning it over on your shoulder. Then back up and lean it on your left shoulder. This is to stretch the tendons that come off of your clavicle that hold your neck steady. And if they get too tense, it will actually press upon the arteries that go into your head, into your brain. And that diminishes the amount of oxygen that's going into your brain. We want to get that oxygen, the blood flow, and the oxygen flowing up. The carotid artery is right behind one of these tendons. And we want to open that up so that, you get a fresh new supply. At this point, you may even feel like yawning, because that happens when your brain is actually able to take more oxygen into it. You'll yawn. Whether or not that happens to you, take another deep breath and hold it. Now, breathe it out. And we are good. We are good to relax and receive our blessing. I want you seated so that your feet are on the ground, whatever ground they're on. Some of you may be in very warm country where you can be barefooted. Most of us are probably in very cold country where we at least need socks on. As long as it's natural material, it doesn't matter. Just bundle up however you need to go. And in a seated position, your head will be pointing up. The crown of your head will be prepared to receive energy from the stratosphere, which filters in energy from the solar system and places beyond, and most importantly, the Holy Spirit. So you're going to be receiving energy from above, moving through your body, whirling around your heart, and out through your feet into the earth. The earth will receive that energy, nourish it, amplify it, make it and filter it, making it safer for you to hold. The earth is a great garbage disposal, and I hope that doesn't, I didn't mean that to be derogatory in any way, but let's face it. She knows what to do with fertilizer. And she takes care of her animals. She takes care of her fish. She takes care of the rotting greenery from last year as it lays under the snow. She recycles everything. And she is a great recycler for you. So let her have it. Let go. Let it move through you. And just see her accepting it like a taffy pull. She's going to pull it out of you. She's going to put it into the earth. She's going to recycle it. And then release a whole brand new flood of energy back through your feet, up your legs, into your torso, around your heart, and out the top of your head, into the cosmic realm, to give out in that realm and then bring new supply back in. This will happen so fast. It could happen literally hundreds of times while you're receiving your blessing, because it's all done energetically. Now I will start my prayer to Yeshua, after which you will follow yours. And I ask the blessing givers to join me now as we offer a blessing for all the prayers that have been asked, all the prayers that were written out and sent to me, all the prayers that were asked for online, knowing they have been heard by the Son of God, the Holy Spirit, and our divine Creator. All of them will be attended to in the most appropriate way for you. And we simply pray for you that your prayers be heard, that your heart be listened to, and your soul be put in charge of your life. Beloved Yeshua, we come before you on this day with great love, with our hearts open, our souls ready and available to be your servant and to be the uplifter of our life and the life of others. We thank you for being with us always, caring about us, and taking us unto yourself, that we may all be one within the family of God. We ask special blessings upon those who are giving their life to providing help and answers to the rest of us that are simply baffled about why things are not working. We ask your blessings and your love upon anyone who is suffering for any reason, that they may know that restoration of their life to their own holy purpose is the strength they need for the grace and relief in all things by their Creator. We ask that you be with this beautiful earth on which we live, that her pains may be less, her needs for correction and rebalance be less, because all is working well in the natural order of things. May we all recover and discover that the recipe for recover was there all along. We just needed to find it in love for ourselves, for you, our Heavenly Creator, and our fellow humankind, and all the animals of the earth, and all the life of the earth. For there is infinite potential in the energy of life. We thank you for the messages you have given us, that we may share, that we may steer the ship of our life a little better with greater understanding. We pray for the children. Always, that they be loved, protected, cared for, and taught in the ways of rightness, that they may grow up to be outstanding children of God. We ask that you be with those who are transitioning to a higher realm, that you be with those who are sick, that they may know you are there, whether or not they are ready to be faithful in their belief, that they know they are not alone, and they will be held in your grace forever. We ask for those who are seeking answers that need to be found for peace, healing, trust, virtue, values, and kinship with love. And our family may be whole, finally. And there may be, once again, heaven on earth. We ask all of these things in your mighty name. In your grace with glory. And in the footsteps of God, wherein you walk. For now and always. Amen. Amen. And amen. Blessing givers, let us stand and begin our blessing.
Your blessing is complete. Now, amen. Amen. And amen. It's time for you to continue just receiving. So, lay down flat wherever it's convenient. Your bed, sofa, floor, mat. If you're in warm country, outside on the grass, be fine. Just receive. And don't think. Don't talk. Don't even pray. Because anything that goes into words will go to your brain. And your brain acts with polarity. So it is not unconditional. Right now, what we want is unconditional. Blessings for now and always. And I wish you a splendid week.